Let's get back out there.
Yeah, a glimpse of what's happening on the inside of your 17-year-old's gaming headset there. It's a grab from the gameplay trailer of Gears of War 4. It's what the young people call a third-person shooter. There you go. It's not released yet, so you heard it first right here on RN. Never mind the Internet of Things, that revolutionary moment in the human experience when your fridge will order its own butter. The ordinary old internet is already, well, it's the technological bottom line of so much of what we do. And no more so in the world of gaming, the vast online and in-home network of death, destruction and unstoppable zombie hordes. Is it all just good fun? Or the thin edge of various insidious online addictions? A question as old as the internet. To consider that this morning, Dr. Vasilios Stavropoulos, he's a senior lecturer in psychology at Federation University and a man with an extensive research history in the online gaming space. And Robin Trivo is a founder of CyberSafe Kids. She's an educator of over 40 years and a grandmother of two. Robin, congratulations.
Thank you.
Vasilios, to begin with you, give us some background here. Your research history here in the gaming space and what got you interested in gaming as a research area.
I think that from a behavioural perspective, gaming can develop into a serious form of addiction. And when I say addiction, I mean a behaviour that someone manifests in order to be happy, in order to be satisfied, because he or she doesn't have other ways to be happy in real life. So clinical cases, clients of mine, motivated me to get engaged into research in relation to gaming.
And what did you discover then?
What did I discover? That, of course, there is an issue there in terms of addictive use of online games, that there are some games which appear to be at higher risk than others, such as what we call massively multiplayer online role PC games, which are virtual worlds where someone can develop an online persona, an online character, through which he or she may participate in the world of the game. And that virtual persona progressively may absorb the player into the virtual context.
Increasingly, they become that person.
Yes.
This is an extraordinary thing, Robin. I mean, this is the thing that the internet has brought to gaming and connectivity and broadband has brought to gaming. It's no longer someone sitting with their TV. It's kids connected, people connected, all sorts of people.
And that's why it's very compelling. Mm-hmm. Because I think in the conversations I have with young people, the emotional attachments they have to the characters and often to the environments, like they're very engaging, compelling environments. I think some young people have a difficulty in differentiating between reality and fantasy. I also see those sorts of behaviours, those addictive behaviours. I think we have to be really careful about how we use the word addiction, and do we have a sort of a shared understanding of what it looks and feels like? Because it might be used quite loosely in some respects, and sometimes the people, the audience for those conversations or the articles don't really understand what it is. And when does something that's normal, and unfortunately normal is very different to our childhood, when does something normal become a problem, and when does that problem become an addiction that needs intervention?
You're taking a fairly clinical sense, I'd say, Vasilios.
Yeah, I do. I think that when a behaviour of using internet games fulfils six criteria, which include salience, so it's a specific frequency within a specific period of time, tolerance, which means progressively higher use of the game, conflicts, because as soon as the player becomes absorbed in the world of the game, he or she starts developing conflicts with people around him, relapse, which means that the player doesn't consciously decide to play the game, but he cannot control his behavior. If he could control his behavior, his actions, he wouldn't do that. And of course, withdrawal symptoms, which in the case of internet gaming disorder tend to be more psychological irritability, frustration when someone is not online. And the final criterion, which is the most important one, it's what we call psychotropic action, which means the way that someone plays the game in order to moderate the way he or she feels. And that's the main issue. Someone who tends to play the games in a way that helps him alternate the way he feels.
And how common do you think that spread of behavior is, that sort of extremity?
I think we need to be very careful in terms of that, and not to be technophobic. We need to be balanced. So it's not very frequent. But saying that, a combination of factors in relation to characteristics of the player, characteristics of the game itself, and characteristics of the real context, could place someone at serious risk.
And Robin, to take that back a step, I mean, yes, there are those people displaying those behaviours at that serious risk that Vasilios describes, but beneath that are there patterns of behaviour that likewise are troubling but aren't at that sort of clinical level?
Yes, and certainly in the work that I do with parents, I facilitate parent workshops and things, and if I say to them, what are your greatest challenges with your children in their sort of digital lives, and they will say, oh, they're so addicted to their devices or they're so addicted to their games. So my question to you is that is over time these sorts of behaviours become more and more entrenched, obviously in the game playing. And one of the things that I do notice is that parents would say, what did I do wrong when they were young that we've set a precedent for their behaviours? Like, it could be they haven't set time limits, or they haven't actually moderated the sorts of games or monitored the sorts of games that their children are playing. So they just don't know what they're doing. And then before you know it, they've got a massive problem because the children are, or the young people are, playing games at the same time they're doing homework or research, and, you know, academic performance drops. And then parents all of a sudden realise, oh, we've got a problem academically. They see changes in behaviour in terms of how they relate to the family or their friends. And then they go, well, what do I do now?
Gaming, addiction, the internet, all these things. We're discussing that. Robin Trivo from CyberSafe Kids and Dr. Vasilios Stavropoulos from the Federation University, a senior lecturer in psychology. Sunday Extra here on RN. This is an interesting thing, Robin. I mean, we talk there about what is, you know, a real commonplace. I mean, kids, screens, it's a thing that, well, it's probably in every family that's listening. And people would say, probably listening to this conversation too, well, yeah, fine, I play some games. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not engaging in behaviours which are harmful. But I wonder if we stop and think about it enough. I wonder if we consider the behaviour, the changes to behaviour, the way in which kids' childhoods have been changed by the online and by games.
Absolutely. And there's been some very interesting work done in the UK that has looked at the shrinking horizons of childhood. So unlike my day, when we were allowed to play out on the streets, go down to the local park, visit the neighbourhood, for a range of reasons, children's lives now have been shrunk in less than a generation by 1/9 of what they were formerly. So what happens is we've got smaller families, we've got children with their own bedrooms, their own devices, which are often introduced into the family through the schools because of the educational value to these devices. Children will go up into their bedrooms, tell their parents we're doing our homework. I think the other thing that you've just raised then is the importance of role modelling. Often children and young people will see their parents developing problematic usage of technology and the internet. You've got the impact and influence of older siblings. Certainly when they go to school, that's often what all they talk about. And it for boys especially, it's how they develop their relationships.
What's the gender split on this, Vasilios, and with particularly problematic behaviour? Is it a boy thing or is it across both genders?
I think it tends to be a boy thing, and this is quite similar with other forms of addictive behaviours where males appear to be at higher risk. Going back to what you asked before, I feel that there are three points that we need to highlight in terms of parents' responsibility. The first has to do with boundaries and the way these are applied. The second has to do with relationships, because what makes internet games addictive or particularly attractive or absorbing has to do with what we call cyber relationships, which tend to have specific characteristics. They are accessible, convenient, and they offer an escape outlet to the user, to the player. And the third point has to do with lack of responsibility. I'm saying this, I'm highlighting these three points because in my mind, parents should be very careful in the way they implement boundaries, the way they relate to their children, and the way they assess, the way they observe, or the way they evaluate how their children relate to others. Because those who tend to be at risk, at higher risk to develop internet gaming disorder symptoms, are those who suffer from lack of relationships in real life. And this is exactly what companies that produce the games try to advance and constantly develop.
So companies that produce games are looking to those risk factors for addictive behavior and are tailoring their games around them.
I would say that they wouldn't use the word addictive. They would use the word attractive. Their aim is to make their products more attractive. And there are two specific qualities which appear to make these games very, very attractive. The first is what we call telepresence, which is a construct that describes the level that the user experiences the world of the game as real, the feeling of being there, as if technology doesn't mediate the experience of the world of the game. And the second has to do with online flow, which is a sense of optimal experience that is advanced by online socialization and progressively higher challenges and constant rewards in the world of the game. So what I would like your audience to understand is that these games are attractive. They are made to be attractive. That there are psychologists who work in the companies that produce these games, and we need to be mindful of that.
And we haven't yet got to virtual reality, which is another dimension of this conversation. But Robin, I mean, we've recently had a lot of media chat about how wonderful Pokemon Go is, for example, because it takes people into the outdoors, clutching their phones, granted, but into the outdoors and actually meeting real people. I mean, there's a sense there of how quietly we've let this background gaming sort of culture, internet culture, escalate unknowingly. If that can be such a breakthrough, we've been little boiling frogs in hot water for some time.
Yes, I think we have. And picking up on, Vasily, your points about the roles of parents in all of this, I think parents need to take more explicit responsibility for knowing what their children are doing when they go online and use these games. Probably the best resource that I know of are the ratings and reviews that are produced by Common Sense Media, which is a non-profit organisation in the US. And they have, they rate and review games on a range of criteria, including sexual violence, sexuality, violence, or a whole range of different things. And then parents can just download an app for that and make that a project in a way that we as a family are going to negotiate what actually you are using and downloading and playing.
But so much of the responsibility of looking after kids has been given over to a screen. I mean, from the earliest of ages.
Yeah.
You, and on that area of how much screen time in lives. Mm. You did your own research here with a girls' school and asked them to audit there.
I did. It was actually based on some census data that came again from Common Sense Media, and they found that teenagers on average spend 9 hours of time per day on top of schoolwork or homework on screens or interacting with media or consuming media. And what I found was when I said to the girls, okay, you do your own audit and tell me, would it be about 9 hours per day? Mm. They got to 9 hours plus really quickly. Now, some of that might be listening to music, but a lot of it was we play games. And then I found that Pokemon Go was the most popular game at the time.
Still an engagement with a device, and that's the interesting thing. Vasilios, is there research which suggests that there's something intrinsically gripping about the experience of a screen itself? Does that have some sort of compelling nature just as a piece of technology?
I think we need to be very careful in the way we define things. The screen itself is not the problem. It could be the face of the problem, but it's not the problem. What makes internet applications or games particularly addictive has to do with something that you highlighted earlier, augmented reality. So a sense of mixing real and virtual. What you described in relation to Pokemon Go mixes two worlds, our fantasy, the world of the game, which is a collective dream, a collective fantasy, if we had to define it somehow, and reality. So it has been found that games who involve more augmented reality features tend to be particularly attractive and at higher risk. In regards to how parents would be able to inform about latest versions of games which tend to be particularly more attractive or addictive, there is a self-help group online which is called Online Gamers Anonymous. So the same way we have Alcoholics Anonymous or Substance Abusers Anonymous, we have them now. And they update regularly new games that tend to be more absorbing.
It's certainly not going to go away, is it? This is the nature of our world.
Yes, and I think we talk about, and we're using the word addiction, you know, here this morning, but I think what I'm very aware of is that for boys as well, they have issues grappling with the proliferation of pornography online. You know, they find that in many cases very compelling and in some cases develop an addiction to pornography. Similarly with gambling, online gambling, and girls, you know, because of the social nature of girls and their relationships and the importance of those relationships, some are developing problematic behaviours such as sleeping with mobile phones under their pillows because of FOMO, fear of missing out, or that they want to be there if their friend needs them, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, which is what I'd say to them, but isn't that why you have parents? But I think that as well as the gaming, I think there are other elements of children's behaviour which we have to be very mindful of and consider the precedents that we set early on and basically parents not abrogating the responsibility but being very mindful and monitoring what their children are doing in on online or on a screen.
It's clearly a moment of huge social transition. I mean, look, this is a conversation that makes me want to sit down and read a book, I think. So that's my response.
Yeah.
Look, there is much more being discussed here. Vasilios will be speaking at an upcoming conference, the 2016 Australian Psychological Congress, and that's 13-16 of this month, September, in Melbourne. You can check that out. Look for that Australian Psychological Congress online. You will see details there. So the conversation continues. And look, thank you both. It's what a world. Brave new world.
Yeah.
It is.
You have to be brave to be in it. Dr. Yes. Vasilios Stavropoulos is a senior lecturer in psychology, Federation University, and Robin Trivo, founder of Cyber Safe Kids. And this is Sunday Extra right here on RN.